Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Joseph Sola. He is the co-founder and CTO of Actea. Joseph, thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Nick. Thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity to come here.
So Actea, organization focused on innovation. We're specifically talking about some of the innovation that I saw at a recent show when we met. Just tell us and the listeners a little bit about your background, how you got to this position, and what drove you.
Yeah, I think it's a very nice story from our side. So today, Actea is a small company. We are 15 people working mainly in Switzerland, Europe, and somewhere in the US. But even if the company is only not even 2 years old, we started this thing now more than 15 years ago. So that's where my background comes also. It also plays a role here. Is that I was originally a telecommunication engineer, so working with signals coming from antennas. At some point, I learned about a group of people working in Switzerland doing innovation on medical devices. So I managed to join that company. It's a Swiss public company called CSEM. And on that company, they were, by 2004, they were working already on how to use optical sensors for something else than simply measuring heart rate. So at that time, so 2004, so now many, many years ago, where no Apple Watch or Garmin devices were out there, those guys were already innovating on using those optical sensors, mainly put on top of the wrist, to measure things like heart rate, pulse oximetry, things that were just impossible to imagine at that time in clinics.
Sorry to interrupt, but one of the things that really strikes me about this is if you cast your mind back to that time, I remember the whole idea that somebody said, wait, you can measure pulse oxygen with a device that sits on and it's light. It was like black magic at the time. And exactly. Yet now it's sort of, oh yeah, sure, we'll just take a pulse ox, clip something on. Sorry to interrupt, but you know, you're right. And it's not that long ago.
No. I mean, pulse ox was initially developed by the 70s. So it was pretty old. But at that time, the devices were big and ugly. They were medical devices, which were not non-invasive. But you could just use them on the operating room. They were so big.
Right.
By the 2000s, they become smaller. And it was clear that it was a path to follow in clinics for the non-invasive continuous monitoring of patients. Then that's when it moved from the operating rooms to the ICUs. But that was all. Everything was in clinic. And at that time, in 2004, there was this bunch of people working in this CSEM company trying to see whether those sensors and those signals could be used for something else. So at that time, it was not clear. There was something about stress, cardiac output, blood pressure that was also on the table at that time. And I personally joined the company at that moment. I'm coming from a family where there is a bunch of my relatives which are hypertensive. So they suffer of high blood pressure. So I personally was very motivated on how to use those signals from those optical signals sensors together with what I knew from signal processing from antennas and microwaves, so to extract information that was more related to blood pressure. So that was 2004. We had nothing on the table. We didn't know at all how to do that. So we spent about 3 to 4 years going through the old textbooks from physiology, going back to studies that were run in animals, mainly on dogs and cats and rabbits on the 30s. So very, very old studies on the very basics of physiology. And we are trying to see what from those signals that we had now from those very nice sensors was the kind of repetition of what was available on those very invasive sensors used in cats and dogs on the 30s. So that's how we started. So we're literally going to very old papers, going through that and seeing what could we repeat using this new sensor. That was about 2006, 2007. At that moment, we had already some ideas, some hypotheses, so we started running experiments. And that was the good thing of being here in Switzerland. We know, yeah, there is a fantastic environment here on innovation. So we could go to animal labs, we could go to operating rooms, we could use volunteers. So we used any type of patients and living thing to measure those signals. And yeah, we mainly spent about 4 to 5 years failing. So we were trying to reproduce the results from those very old manuscripts and apply the same approaches on the new signals, and it just didn't work.
And so, I think an important point here to pull out, because I always like to, you know, the incremental learning point that I hear repeatedly in this show when I talk to people is that failing is absolutely an essential part of incremental improvements, because those are the things that you learn from, right?
Exactly. And indeed, we knew why we failed. So we had those hypotheses and we thought some of them could be good. So we tried them, and when they failed, it was clear why they failed.
Right.
So this helped us a lot to learn how to move further. So I think one important piece of all this research and our company now, Actia, is that we are not afraid of science. We are not afraid of being in front of peers. And still now, we are a very young startup, and we are publishing like hell. So everything that we can and that we can disclose, we try to publish that out. Even on journals, conferences, we are spending a lot of our budget going around the world just to expose what we are doing to people like us, and people mainly scientists, just to tell them, look, that's what we think that will work. What do you think? And we've been doing this for the last 16 years. Of course, we have some as a company now, some IP issues that we try to keep in-house. But the basic of the science, we are really not afraid of sharing this as much as we can. So at that moment, we are failing a lot, and we understood why. And also, thanks to the, I would say worldwide community on people working on physiology, they also guided us through conferences and congresses on why this was failing. So we took a lot from all those people. And slowly and by in a really incremental way, we managed to go through all those things that didn't work. And suddenly everything started to be better and better. We're capturing, the sensors were getting better, smaller, less power consuming. And we were managing also together a lot of new data sets with great annotated data sets of our optical sensors together with invasive measurements done on humans and in animals. And all together, so all this general knowledge from around the world, together with the new sensors and together with this data set that we were compiling, managed to create a new knowledge, and that's what we have now here in the company, on how to process those signals to get, in this case, blood pressure. That was about 2016 that the results started to be really positive.
So gathering that data, clearly some of the insights that derived from that was, both the improvements in the sensors that have contributed, design, technology, but also the processing of that data. One of the things that strikes me, and I'd just like to understand the funding of this through CSCM, I think you said. How is that achieved? Who's paying for that, or who paid for that? How did that happen?
Welcome to the Swiss environment. So the way it works here, it was initially kind of public funded research. Mm-hmm. The goal of this CSCM company, and there are a bunch of companies like that in Switzerland, is to attract public money and some industrial money to make the overall innovation on Switzerland to go on.
Right.
So I cannot really disclose the details on how this has been transferred, but there are a lot of ways of create innovation, innovative technologies in Switzerland that can be later on be transferred into startups or spin-offs or whatever you call them, so that they can be commercially being used later on.
No, and I think the important thing for me to bring out here is to emphasize the point that investment in public activities and just broad research that, you know, as you describe, but appropriately, you know, lots of failures, but all that learning that ultimately creates this positive, innovation that can then be spun out, which is where you've sort of move to at the point that you, I think, had a foundation that you could successfully take and do something with, right?
I fully agree. And I think that's a very important point, Nick, is that around the 2000s, when a lot of startups came up, most of them, there were, in particular in the Silicon Valley, there were tech startups, so mainly based on technology. In this case, they took great technologies and they created a business out of that. Now, Actia is an example of a startup that we are in the medical domain, and we are developing not just gadgets, not just wearable devices, we're developing medical devices. There is a long list of companies that started in the Silicon Valley trying to do medical devices, a startup, and most of them failed. And they failed because they didn't have the resources to go through all this process of learning while being paid or while being financed by venture capitalists. So we do think that to go into this space where there is a lot of science involved, and science means that not everything is clear and there will be a lot of failure in the path, this should be done and kept into research institutes. And when this is ready and when the science part has been solved, then it's time to start talking about business.
Right.
And if you look at the list of medical devices startups, some of the very big names in the West Coast, most of them, they failed and just they ran out of money because VCs just didn't believe anymore on that because results were not unexpected, which is normal. You can just not create great results randomly.
Yeah, I'm smiling here as I'm listening to you thinking, yeah, I want to meet the VC that's got 3 to 4 years of investment in, you know, heavy science and research, costly activities that is all wrong. I haven't met them yet. I'm pretty sure that you haven't, but you know, that's part of the value proposition of this public funding, and you know, important to bring out because obviously as a scientist, and you are too, you know, that's how we create innovation with that investment. So important.
I agree. I think that's a very good playground where public funding and VCs can meet. So when you go into funding companies that are based on science, like Actia, that's the perfect match. So VCs, they come with the money to make this a business, and they profit of the money that was publicly creating that knowledge. And finally, they create new jobs by using that knowledge. So it's really a perfect match.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Josep Sola. He's the co-founder and CTO of Actia. And in fact, we're just about to start talking about Actia and some of the innovations that you've come up. Tell us what it is that you've got. I've seen it. Help us understand and describe the device, the innovation, the solution that you've essentially created.
Just to make it very easy, before talking about the solution, I think it's important to talk about the problem that we're trying to solve. In our case, the problem we're trying to solve is the problem of people that need to have their blood pressure being monitored. So it's mainly hypertensive people, so patients that have their blood pressure, which is too high. Those people, they need to have their blood pressure measured normally every day, every morning. So the physician will ask them, when you wake up, you just sit down, relax for 10 minutes, you put this cuff around your arm, you inflate it, and then you write down the numbers on a paper, and then you start your day. And that's the normal routine of those people. And this only gives to the physician, if this is done, which is not the case, most people, they just forget about doing that. This gives to physicians only a one-shot measurement of blood pressure per day. And by using that, so after 1 year, these guys, they go back to the office of the physician office, and they have this paper with one measure every 1 month normally. And the physician needs to adapt the treatment based on that, which is kind of random adapting because you have no knowledge on what happened. You had only one measurement per day, nothing about the night, nothing about day-night changes, which is an important thing to happen. So that's the state of the art today. I mean, people that are surviving seems to be pretty good, but we think that this can be done much, much better. And there is more and more knowledge, which is not even created by Actia, on the fact that the day and night blood pressure gives much more information on your real cardiovascular health than one single morning measurement.
Correct.
So that's the status today. Now, when we came with our technology, we came with a solution that was developed in order to measure blood pressure without having to inflate a cuff. So it's a simple optical sensor, which is put, in our case, on the wrist, because we think that the wrist is a very comfortable place to have a sensor. It's simply there. It's shining some light into your skin, but doesn't have any pressure on you. So you don't feel it at all. And that's where our solution comes. So our product and what we are pushing now, it's a device, which is a medical device, that is around your wrist, and it's measuring your blood pressure during the day and during the night over days, weeks, months, and years. And the way we have developed it, and that's a very long-term optimizing process, is that we are using very little energy. So we have very long battery autonomy, and that's part of the journey of the patient that we are trying to propose here, is that we do want people to forget that they are ill. We don't Right. want them to have a big, messy device on their wrist that's inflating every 2 hours. We don't want them to recharge this thing every day. We just want them to have their life and have no influence on them while we're indeed tracking them and tracking for things that really matters. We don't want to track steps. We don't want to track only heart rate. Doesn't make any sense for those people. They want to measure blood pressure, full stop, nothing else. So our product now is a device that is a very cool wearable device on the wrist. It's a bracelet that you charge once, you put it on your wrist, and then for 1 month, you just forget about it. So for 1 month, the battery and the memory allow the device to measure once per hour your blood pressure. And after this 1 month, you download the data, you recharge, and you go on.
So I have to ask, because you know, anytime this gets floated in the public domain, there's always pushback on the science of this. And you and I spent some considerable time talking about this at the show. And, you know, we'll provide a link in the blog post to your published work. So you have a whole book essentially dedicated to this. I think, you know, the focus of your research. But if you can you explain why it is that this is possible where people believe that it is not possible, as simply and as succinctly as possible?
Yeah, as much as I can say on a radio. So again, we are not afraid about sharing our science. I'm very happy to share that. To explain it in 2 minutes, the way it works and what we are doing is not magic. Again, we are based here on science that was developed and initiated on the 30s using animals and using very old equipment of the 30s. Mm-hmm. The way it works is that every time that your aortic valve is opening, so the interface between your heart and your aorta, there is a valve that opens. When this valve opens, it will generate a pulse that will start propagating along your arteries. If you take your finger and you put it on your wrist, you can feel your pulse there. The pulse you feel here is not your blood coming into the artery. It's a pulse that came from the heart and went extremely fast to your wrist. It's much faster than blood. Blood is going at about some centimeters per second. This pulse is several meters per second, so it's 100 times faster.
Right.
So this pulse is going through your arteries, and this pulse is affected by a lot of things. But one of the things that affects this pulse is blood pressure. So if you just try to imagine these Asian doctors that use palpation to diagnose patients. So they put the three fingers on top of the artery and the wrist, and they can already feel whether that patient is more like a running horse or a sleeping rabbit. That's the way they call it.
Yeah.
So they feel the shape of the pulse. And indeed, we are not trained for that. We just put the finger, we humans, we put the finger on the artery and we feel it just pulsing. But this pulse has a very specific shape. And this shape is not a random shape, has been generated in the interface between the heart and the arteries, and also through how those arteries, they will propagate and reflect this pulse at every bifurcation. So this pulse has a lot of information. This was already studied on the 30s, as I said, by very smart physiologists, and they understood that there was some information on that pulse that related to stiffness, related to blood pressure, and a lot of different vascular diseases. So that's what we are doing indeed. It's called pulse wave analysis, and we just published a full book on that. And there are ways to analyze those signals from the arteries where you look at that shape and you can extract from that how the blood pressure is changing. Because every time, now that I'm just talking, if I'm standing up, my blood pressure will change, and that both shape will also change. So there are some features, some very relevant information on the shape of that pulse that relates to your blood pressure. And that's what we do. We don't do it by putting invasive sensors on the arteries. We do that, and that's the tricky part, by using optical sensors, which are noisier, which are crappy. There are a lot of issues there. But there are still ways to track from those optical sensors that information that physicians and physiologists, they could find already on the circuit.
So, you know, it's an impossible task talking over the radio to explain it. I think, you know, I was convinced through the discussions. I think, you know, importantly, the published works speak to that. Let's stipulate that this works. You now have essentially a really very small sensor that sits on the wrist. It is a month long, so set it and forget it, which is absolutely the way to capture this information. I know you individually, you've been wearing yours, I don't know how long, but you had some interesting insights from this. We've got a few minutes left. If you could just share just a little bit of some of the insights that you've managed to get. And then tell us a little bit about the plans for where this is going and how people can reach out and find out more.
Yeah, so about the insights. So as I said, we have been running trials on animals and people since many years. Now about ourselves. So we are wearing these ourselves since more than 9 months now. And the amazing thing is to see how blood pressure is clearly not a picture. We all knew that continuous blood pressure has insights, but we are just amazed on ourselves to see how our own blood pressure will change through the days, the nights, and the weeks. It's just amazing. Now, we literally have our own profile of blood pressure over 9 months, and you realize that you take that profile, for sure, blood pressure during the day, it's higher than during the night. You could expect that. But then you take one hour of the day, let's say 9 a.m., and you look at the blood pressure at that time of the day over months, and that number can change up to 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury.
Right.
So this means that if I was going to the physician that day or the day after, he would pick up a random number and say, you are good or you are hypertensive.
Right.
And that's exactly the point where we are. I mean, we don't need to convince physicians. They are more than convinced that they just want to have it. We do believe that these type of devices and these type of technologies will change the way patients are being diagnosed and patients are being treated. And we know because ourselves, we are experiencing the way our blood pressure changes. And we also have a lot of data on patients, and we see how much the blood pressure changes on them as well. And we're just waiting for this to be on the market to show to the world how this will change the paradigm on monitoring blood pressure. So that's about the insights. Then about the next steps, just to be clear, we are still not in the market. So we have finished our clinical trials. And now our next step is to get regulatory approval. We're going for US and Europe first. We will inform about that when this is ready. We are in the process now. And our main goal now is to make as soon as possible this available to as much people as possible. We do believe that this will change their life. We are really doing here a wearable device that it's cool to wear, but it's indeed a medical device. And this will be a new paradigm, and we expect here to open a new paradigm on wearable devices that don't track just stupid things, they track things that really matter.
Yeah, so I just think an exciting time with, you know, the addition of this, you know, constant stream of data. I mean, I personally learned with my continuous glucose monitor that sat on my arm for 2 weeks that, you know, this single measurement of glucose, you know, arbitrarily, perhaps in the morning after breakfast, whatever it was, absolutely was not representative of my, you know, various levels throughout the day. And I know that's true. And I couldn't be more excited about this technology from an innovation standpoint and the opportunity. So I'm excited for this to come, you know, excited to have seen it and seen some of the innovation that you brought. So just remains for me to thank you for joining me and sharing a little bit of your journey, Joseph. So thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much, Nick. Have a good day.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.